Welcome to episode 178 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, Jen, and Nick. This week, we read X-Force New Beginnings by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred. And now, the cast begins.
Who is your favorite character and why?
Your mother, because she is your mother and raised you.
Snap.
Oh, I was waiting for that to get the snap, and then it got sweet at the end. Because she raised you.
Nice.
Yeah, that looks like enough notes for me.
Yeah, you wrote a lot of stuff.
I didn't write any of that. That was all Nick.
Oh, really?
I might have done some homework.
That's good, because we never do. I'm glad somebody did. Well, often one of us will.
This is my first time ever doing anything, so I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it and not screw up too much.
I appreciate that. I like to screw up a lot.
Hello.
Hey, Jen. Jen, meet Nick. Nick, meet Jen.
Hello.
Jen is on the podcast because when I was in college, in grad school, we took some classes together, and I was thinking about starting a podcast, and when I was sitting in class, Jen would occasionally, like once every other month, reference a comic book during class, and so randomly, like the second to last week of class, I was like, hey Jen, I know we don't talk that much in class, but do you want to join a podcast with me? And she was like, yeah, fuck it, what the hell? And we've been doing this every week for like 4 years.
All
right. Dang, we've been doing it for that long?
Well, I don't know if it's 4 years. I know it's longer than you've had a son.
Almost, because we started in, I think the first episode was like August of 2010.
Yeah, I think so.
And he was born in June, so of the following year.
Lucia was not pregnant when I met you guys.
Yep, that would be correct.
This podcast is older than your child.
Both of them.
Yeah.
And that's why I still do it, because it's more important.
It's okay. Your wife doesn't listen.
Nope.
And I know David from college because he was cool.
Was?
Well, I mean, this one, when I met you, I was like, hey, that guy looks cool. Let's be friends.
Oh, you thought I looked cool? That's great. I'm glad.
Yeah, you look awesome.
It makes me feel good.
Good. I'm glad. And then I know Nick from football.
Pretty much, yeah.
From sports.
Like the Sunday when you guys go to a pizza thing?
Yes. I should say church. It'd be more
we're on
clear.
The same team, actually. We play football together. I'm a quarterback. He's my running
really?
Back. Yeah.
You're a running back?
He's a linebacker,
man.
Too, yeah.
I'm a good running back. I actually was a running back before. I was good.
Have you seen his 440? I don't know if that's a thing, but his 440 is really good.
It's slow, but it carries you.
Oh, okay.
Is that a thing? I should have gone the route with, like, 440s, like malt liquor.
Speaking of which, I've decided to, the part of Nick Western that will be played by gin and tonic.
All right, I'm down for that.
Well, gin and ginger ale.
Good enough. So what have you been up to, Jen?
We started raiding again.
Yeah.
You always come back.
I know.
I haven't gone back yet.
You will. It's a matter of time.
I saw your thing, Andy, about BlizzCon.
Yeah, you'll come back to BlizzCon.
And I was like, you know, I just need to get my laptop before then so I can bring it.
That's right. I'll have my laptop by then, too. We can do, like, a LAN party. Do people still do LAN parties?
I don't know.
I hope so.
It's been a while since we did one.
Like Counter-Strike.
Counter-Strike, oh god. Yeah, we can do a LAN party. So, Nick and Jen, I'm officiating a wedding this weekend.
Okay, I didn't know you could do that.
Up in Napa. It's my third one ever, and I'm hoping I'm going to get, like, pictures or a video or something. I'm going to start, like, a page and try to sell my services. Because apparently, like, if you're good, people will pay you, like, $500 or something ridiculous.
Oh, damn. You should do that.
I know. For one day, that's pretty fucking good. So, anyway, they sent me the text that they wanted to use, and I was like, that's really short. Do you want me to put in some filler? And they said, yeah, sure, go ahead. Put in some filler and send it back. So, there's a scene in Deep Space Nine where Martok lectures Sisko about marriage. So I'm going to put that in.
You should just That's do awesome. George Carlin's seven words you can't say on TV. Just walk into it.
You would have to send it back. They're going to have to approve it.
That's fine. Do send the, and then just launch into this improv style. I'll give them a story for the rest of their life.
Yeah, about that asshole who ruined their marriage or their wedding day. Well, I mean, it still would be a story. That's good. I wonder if I could sell myself on a website like that.
Craigslist.
Yeah, I was going to say Craigslist.
Yeah.
Services.
Under Christ. Casual encounters.
I like what you say, sir.
Hey, Nick, give me an adjective. Give me your favorite adjective.
Superfluous.
I like superfluous.
What's this for?
That matters. No, that's even relevant.
Okay. Are we playing Mad Libs?
No, you'll see. Kind of.
Toilet.
Kind of.
Toilet.
Superfluous toilet?
I picture just like 8 toilets in a row or on top of one another.
I pictured one in like the middle of a couch.
That's actually pretty awesome.
See, and I'm not talking like a toilet seat built into a couch. I'm talking like you get a couch and you cut out the middle section and just add a toilet.
Oh, okay. So not hooked up to anything.
No, just superfluous or very academic notes. He had some arm shit going on.
Well, he's not mutant-y anymore because he doesn't have his arm.
But he has red eyes.
Apparently he does kinky shit with dump or something.
Yeah.
That's what Edie said.
Yeah, that was weird.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't say, oh, yeah, Andy. That was not an oh, yeah moment.
Well, it depends on your point of reference. I mean,
yeah.
Have you ever been with an amputee? It's not that bad. I gotta tell you.
I have not.
So let's record this.
What? You don't like hearing about the exploits of my past life?
I'm sure it was great.
You don't sound too short. See, I can talk about it because my wife never listens to the show. She just records the intros.
You reminiscing about your amputee?
No. So. No, I'm definitely not. No. Never.
But it was, anyway.
Okay. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another superfluous episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And Nick.
I provided superfluous.
I'm helping.
This is true.
So even if I do nothing else, I've done that. I'm sorry, go on, sir.
So we booked Nick to help us out while David was away, but David wasn't away as long as we thought he was. So he's joining us anyway, and we're reading X-Force New Beginnings, issues 116 to 120 is in that trade. This is written by, oh fuck, I deleted that other note.
Peter Milligan.
Milligan.
Peter Milligan, with art by Mike Allred, who just did FF.
Yeah, we just read that.
We just
like,
read that
a while
like,
ago.
Like an arc and a half ago. So yeah.
It was before I was gone. That's so, the important part
yeah,
of that.
That's right. So, Nick.
Yes.
This was your suggestion to do X-Statics.
Yes.
Give us some background. What happened? Because this team is all new with this issue, right? With 116?
Yeah, so...
What's the deal with this comic?
In, like, 2000, 2001, whenever this happened, like, Joe Quesada and all those people came in, and they're, like, just giving books away to people. And so they wanted Allred, who had done something like, had done Madman and a couple other indie things, and Milligan, who had done, I don't know, Wikipedia, look him up. And so they're, like, you want to do this? And they said, no, we don't. We don't want to do an X-book. There's too much continuity. There's too much time travel, too much other stuff, and who wants to inherit someone's thing? And then they came back the next day and were like, what? I mean, I guess we could just do whatever the hell we want to do. Sure, why not? And they're like, all right, here, have X-Force, because no one cares about X-Force. So the issue before we, what, so that's 115? 115, yeah. Like X-Force, Cannonball, Domino, all of them, they go into this building, and it blows up, and it's like, oh my god, X-Force is dead. And then 116, when they start, it's like, hey, here's a whole new team, everyone, and you start to get to know all these guys and all that kind of stuff, and then just dead. Fucking dead at the end of the issue.
So in two issues, they completely murder two teams.
Pretty much. Well, not all of them, because, like, you know, let's see, issue 2 or 3, I think, is when the remnants of X-Force come back and, like, they fight over the name. Something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, but,
like,
I mean, we...
Like, 3 panels.
Yeah, yeah, just basically to show you're not dead, and you can show up in Legendary at some point. Good job.
But I love that they were like, okay, we can do anything. Let's just, let's kill everybody and then kill everybody again. Just to fuck with people. But you know what? Like, it seems ridiculous and stupid, but it does a good job of setting the tone for this comic as being terrible.
Yeah. The whole point of this book is to be unpleasant.
Oh, I hope that means you guys didn't like it. This is one of my favorites.
No, it's very fun to read, but as in, they're terrible people.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
No,
yes.
It does what it's doing really, really well. It's just so unpleasant because everything is shitty for these people, and they're shitty.
No, you
I was going to say, I've always seen it as the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia of comics.
That's what I was just going to say. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I was going to be like, this is like watching It's Always Sunny.
Oh, fantastic.
Because they're just, yeah, they're terrible people doing terrible things, and you can't help but sympathize with them.
Yeah. And then when you finally get somebody who is a nice guy, it's Mr. Sensitive, aka the Orphan.
who has that name for like one issue, not even a full issue, like half the issue, and he's like, no, I'm the orphan, this name's stupid, I don't agree.
So like, were all these characters original for X-Force? Yeah. Or were they okay, except for Dupe? Yeah. Right, Dupe had been around before.
This
is the invention of Dupe,
really?
Yeah, first time ever. And he was just kind of like a throwaway joke, like, hey, we're gonna have this green potato thing in the background every now and again, and it just gets more and more and more.
He was kind of funny, and then when I got the episode with, or the, when we got to the issue with Wolverine, it got really good. I loved him in that.
Later on, they have a two-part miniseries of just the two of them together. It's fantastic.
I love that because the whole time Dupe is talking in his Dupe language, and everybody just like ignores him. And you think it's because they can't understand him, right? But then you get like the R2-D2 Luke Skywalker moment with Dupe and Wolverine, where you can't understand Dupe, but Wolverine does. And you can get that half of the conversation to know what the fuck is going on. And it's like, so everybody before is just being a complete dick and just ignoring Dupe.
Dupe can speak English now. He now speaks English. In so the recent all-new Dupe number one.
Oh, that's right. He just got his own comic.
He has his own ongoing.
Oh, that is awesome.
I kind of want to add that to my poll list now.
I picked up number one.
The first two already. If you ever wondered what happened in Battle of the Atom. Actually, yeah, that's the thing. I need to go back now and read Battle of the Atom. So I took a long break from comics and just came back recently. So this is basically the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of Battle of the Atom.
Excellent.
So the thing with a big cast like this, right, is that you get a ton of characters and you have to introduce them all. And you have to give them a little bit of development, even if you know you're going to kill them off. You have to at least tell us who they are so we can, I don't know, have any kind of emotion one way or the other about them dying. Like, I don't remember Battering Ram at all, really. And the only thing about it I remember about Plasm is that his kill rate was really low, so that would make me upset that he died. But, like, other than those things, you don't really get on them. The people I think you get the most of in this are Yugo Girl, which is a fucking amazingly horrible name, the Orphan, and the Anarchist. You get Fat a little bit.
Yeah. Actually, so the three of those first three that you mentioned, Yugo Girl, Anarchist, and Orphan, they're basically the core. Mm-hmm. And then there's a plot, well, we'll probably cover it next episode. There's basically a subplot that develops about Vivisector, who you didn't even mention in the notes. I had to add him.
Yeah.
And Fat. They just realize, oh, we're completely being written off. So they have their own little side plot of them just having adventures, like, just to get attention. Because this whole thing, the whole deal of it is they're a reality TV show. Or there's extra, you know, things you can watch online. Remember, 2000 is the year that Survivor came out. And
oh,
so
that's right.
Like, yeah. So this later on, they even predict American Idol. Like, they call it a few months in advance. That whole thing happens. Like, I mean, so this is a whole commentary on celebrity and all that kind of junk. So the first, like, five issues are all basically, hey, reality TV's weird, isn't it? And why are we following these people? But, yeah. Huh. I have no idea what my point was. Jin may have helped on that.
Well, that's fair enough. Jin Genie died in the first episode, though.
Oh,
the first
she was issue. Fantastic. She could make earthquakes. She can answer, man. Yeah. So, actually, you mentioned something about, I have no idea who Battering Ram is and all that kind of stuff. And it's funny because, so the joke is that, like, you know how Wizard would do, like, those previews, like, hey, here's what you get to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, they wrote this big, long article about the new X-Force. And so it was Milligan and Ulrich just trolling them, like, oh, we're going to have Jin Genie, who has alcohol powers, and La Nui, who you also ignored, because what is he? He's like this green French guy because he's a frog. Get it? That's the joke. And, you know, all this other kind of dumb stuff. And so they make this entire article about it, and then, as I said, just friggin' dead. And then it's like, ha-ha, here's the real team.
I would love somebody to do that to CBR today.
You know, I don't think a thing like this would get made today. Maybe it's like an indie thing or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It would have to be... The only chance it would have been to happen today would be with something like the New 52. But even then, it's not the same kind of thing, because that's a reboot of continuity, and so... you'd be expecting new characters to come up next week.
The New 52 is like super serious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this I think Nick put it best, is that this whole comic is like trolling the readers.
Yeah. There's nothing serious in this.
Way.
Yeah.
And they... because of the way that DC pitched the New 52, they could not do something like this. People would, I think the joke would not fly.
DC just doesn't believe it's fun.
Yeah, that's probably the point.
So, yeah, I completely forgot to put Vivisector in the notes, but that makes me sad because I really do like the interplay between Vivisector and Fat because they're super antagonistic, right? Just on the surface. Wait. On the surface, because they've been told, like, Fat, you need to act like some hip gangster kid, and Vivisector, you're the bookworm who goes crazy at night, you know? But, like, really, they're probably more like each other than anybody else on this team. They really should be bros.
Just you wait until the next book.
Okay.
I won't spoil because I do that too much, but yeah.
Because, I mean, as you're reading, you're like, especially when you get that little scene with Fat leaving his parents' place and having to be like, oh yeah, I'm really sorry they made me talk about all this. They just needed to gangster up my character. And it's like, oh, that's...
Yeah, I mean, he's actually kind of a cool guy, right?
Yeah. I liked that about him because it's like letting you in on the in-joke. If he's just like this white kid who's super gangster and he acts ignorant and comes from white trash, it's like, oh, look, we're going so overboard and gritty. But then if you make him a real person, it's suddenly like, hey, look what we're playing at here. This is not what it is. And that's good. I mean, it's those touches that made this enjoyable.
Well, I mean, that one little throwaway scene is what changes him from being a stock, two-dimensional character into somebody you might actually give a crap about.
Yeah, and, like, same thing with Bloke. Like, I mean, literally in his press bio, because I don't know if anyone listening to this has read the thing, but all the new X-Statics characters, I'm sorry, X-Force characters, later on they're called X-Statics, all the new X-Force characters have these little press bios, like they don't even get recruited, it's just, here's the release, and there you go. And so Bloke is literally every gay stereotype you could imagine. And then just at the end, there's that little human touch where he's saying goodbye to his boyfriend, and he admits, you know, I'm just doing this to get famous and all that kind of stuff. But it's like that little thing, you know, if you're going to die literally five panels into the first mission you're on, you got to have that little bit, or otherwise it's just kind of like, all right, no one cares.
You know what's funny? Bloke dying in this and the way they handled Bloke being gay was better than the way they handled, what was the kid's name in Power of Ion? When we read that like 4 weeks ago.
Kyle Rayner's little buddy?
Yeah, Kyle Rayner's little assistant. I don't know, but this was the better...
Gambit?
This was
I don't know.
This was the better handling of a gay character than that. This was better than that.
Right?
And this was all of, like, two pages.
I wish they hadn't killed him, though, because this kind of makes it look a little more like tokenism, probably more than intended, and that's sad.
I feel like maybe that was the point, though.
Yeah, it's just...
They were like,
it's
look
unnecessary.
At all these, look at all these tokens we're putting in. We're going to give you all of the tokens.
I can't spoil stuff, but they actually make a real big point of that, especially with the show and all that kind of stuff. But it advances later on, so it becomes a little less token and actually, but a little more human as it goes along. The reveal for that is where if we're going to be reading it, but no.
Hmm.
Yes. Mm. So, it's unfortunate. I can't. No. You go on.
You're full of spoilers, Nick. Damn it.
I am. I swear to God. I just want to say, you know, it's like Rosebud, it's his sled, and Luke is his kid, and all that kind of stuff. But no. I will restrict myself.
So, okay. Yeah. Big cast. Who was your guys' favorites?
I really liked Mr. Sensitive.
Really?
Yeah. I enjoyed that he did the very realistic thing that someone in his position would do, where he sits down with the gun and plays Russian roulette every night. Because I can see a person doing that. And his life is shitty, and he's okay. Well, he's not okay with that, but it's not played off like it's a good thing that he ended up in this position.
I don't know.
I agree with Jen, but not necessarily for the same reasons. I feel like he's the only character that I feel like I got any, I got to know on any meaningful level. And, you know, that's maybe selling the book short a little bit, but talking about this as just a trade paperback, he stood out the most to me. And he's interesting. Like, you know, most X-Men or a lot of superheroes we see and, you know, we get like how their power is the curse, but it's a blessing in disguise at the same time, like Beast being blue or something, or the Morlocks aren't maybe a great example, but his power kind of sucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like his prowess in combat has nothing to do with his power necessarily. He does put his power to good use by, like, you know, when he pulls the tube out of the little boy's head and stuff. But most of the time, it's like his power sucks, and his enemies, the coach uses it against him, you know. His power is pretty much just a weakness. And on top of that, he does not look, you know, normal, like characters, you know, like Scott Summers or something.
Yeah.
He looks normal, at least.
I'm wearing red sunglasses.
Yeah, it's hard to go out in public when you are purple-skinned and have antenna.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Nick? Who's your favorite?
Oh, sorry, I just didn't want to interrupt you.
Just in this trade.
Just of this trade. Actually, believe it or not, it's Zeitgeist. I actually like him a lot in that first issue, the one that he's in. And it's probably because you are getting that story about him. You know, oh, this girl, I love her. And then I power vomited. But his power is basically Cyclops, except instead of whenever he opens his mouth or opens his eyes, ruby light comes out. It's whenever he throws up, it's acid. So he puked on a girl or whatever. That's his backstory. But it's that scarred him for life. And I just love the fact that, you know, you go into this issue, oh, we're going to get to know the new Cyclops of this team. Oh, he's badass like Cable. Oh, he's whatever, whatever, whatever. And you find out, oh, the whole thing was him reminiscing as he's lying there, guts falling out, one leg just shot off, all that kind of stuff. And then it's just basically the entire story of him dying. So I just really enjoyed that. Additionally, yeah. So in this book, you discover he was in on the whole deal. So, I mean, it's just kind of neat. And, of the show as a whole, or the show? Yeah, that works. Good job, Nick. Of the book as a whole, though, like of the people introduced so far, I agree actually with Dave about Orphan. He is basically the viewpoint character of this entire damn thing. Like, you get, like, early on, he's the only one you even kind of even know anything about.
Yeah, I gotta say, I think my favorite was the Anarchist.
Oh, he's fantastic. You love him. I don't want to sell him short.
No, I like the Anarchist just because... his name is just what he is, right? Like, when they're fighting over who gets to lead the team between Yugo Girl and the Anarchist, and then he loses it and doesn't give a shit. He's like, yeah, I just wanted to rile her up. It's like, oh yeah, that's perfect. That's just perfect. Then he doesn't actually give a shit.
Well, it also helps he's the only one really with a power that you would traditionally think, oh, okay, that's... Yeah, I'm going to be a superhero with that. His sweat is acidic, and somehow that gives him the ability to shoot, like, melt people's faces.
He threatens to sweat on people. Don't make me sweat on you. So I'm a little surprised that none of us picked Yugo Girl, because we get a lot of her character too. I mean, getting Mr. Sensitive, like, that, you get so much of his character, and I totally understand attaching to him, because he is, out of everybody in here, I feel like he's the most like a normal person, which is weird to say, because he has that whole sensitivity thing and tries to kill himself every night, so that's definitely not normal and average. But I mean, compared to people like Dupe and Coach and Fat, well, I guess Fat's pretty normal too, I don't know, but... Yugo Girl,
she's kind of a terrible person. I think she's the most obviously terrible, especially when, you know, we get the whole thing where she almost betrays, where she, you know, she basically betrays the Orphan and then has a change of heart. I think her change of heart is not particularly redeeming.
Yeah.
Even though in the end it seems to be, you know, everything worked out for the best, but she still was kind of a not a nice person.
It does stop her from being a villain, though, right?
No, I don't think she's a villain. Yep. I think she's just a bad person.
Okay.
She's very morally self-centered.
Yeah.
And even when we see her being good, it seems self-centered. Like, she realizes that she has feelings for the Orphan, and then she doesn't want him to die.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, we get this sense that her background's sad, and she gave up all this stuff to get this shitty job. But what we get doesn't seem like enough for her to be as bad as she is, and then when she feels bad about what she's gonna do, it doesn't seem like she has remorse, but it doesn't seem like enough to make her likable, per se.
Yeah, you know, I completely forgot about how she realizes in the end that she might kind of have a thing for the Orphan. Because that totally changes it for me. There's that classical thing with, if you take a character and they do something bad, that's okay because everybody in their life does something wrong or screws up or does something bad. But whether you can tell if they're a villain or not is if they redeem themselves or work to actively right the wrong that they did. Because a villain does something wrong and doesn't give two shits about it, because they either have a good rationalization in their head or wanted to do something wrong and wanted to be evil. So that's how you can know, that's how you can get, you can identify your villains, because they're the people who do something wrong and don't try to redeem themselves. But Yugo Girl does try to redeem herself, except if it's something selfish. Does that really mean she's redeeming herself, or does she just, it's good because it fits within her character parameters. It's she's changing who she is and acting differently, but still is the same person. So it's excellent writing in that way. It just makes me wonder if it's really that good. Because I was all down for you, Gogoro. Like, yeah, she was going to be really bad. That was going to be terrible. And this was going to be frustrating to read. But then she redeemed herself. But now I'm thinking maybe not.
Well, so I'm going to backpedal a little bit on what I said, though. She's definitely, even though I didn't pick her as my favorite character, she's not, I wouldn't say she is the character I liked the least. I feel like this is a growth moment for her where we can see where she is at the beginning of the series, and I feel like she's going to be a character that is going to stick around for a long time and definitely grow and become more likable.
Mm-hmm.
But she hasn't arrived at that yet.
And she does. The thing is, like, as I said, she basically is your introduction to the whole thing. Like, so when she's on that dinner and, you know, you see the paparazzi around them and she's lecturing Zeitgeist about one of my favorite lines, for someone named Zeitgeist, you really don't seem to be with the spirit of the times. just explaining, like, hey, here's the whole point of the comic, right? Like, yeah. We're just selfish people, but we're doing this because, I mean, think about it, none of them really have powers that are very superhero-y. But yeah. If you lived in that universe, right, and you're like, oh, hey, look, I can turn pink and super strong, wouldn't you just decide, hey, why not become a superhero, right? I have no qualifications, but here's this guy, these people, they're willing to offer millions of dollars, fame, fortune, whatever. Get me out of the trailer park, get me out of the Ozarks. I think that's where you go girls from. Mm-hmm. You see your house a little bit, that kind of thing. It's just like, she's the one that makes... I mean, it helps that she's the only one of the few that survives the first issue. And so you get to see where she comes from, all that kind of stuff. But that's why she ends up being one of the only ones getting, like, actually three-dimensionalized a little bit going on, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and you know, the backstory of her being in the Ozarks really does...
land of white supremacy, child weddings, and something else.
But it also, it puts her self-centeredness into perspective, because instead of having her personality be pinned on narcissism, that's more of a side effect. Her identity, her core identity, is then pinned on fear, because she's afraid if she's not on X-Force, is that where she'll be? If she,
that's pretty deep.
If she does choose to let this go and not be the team leader and step away from X-Force, what does she do? What happens to her? Does she just end up going back to the fucking Ozarks and living with her two moms? I think it was two moms, it looked like. I don't know.
Like grandma and mom or something?
Oh, yeah, maybe grandma and mom. But like,
age difference.
So it kind of takes the edge off of her character, and it gives you an excuse for why she's a bad person, because she's deathly afraid of what she used to be and where she's from, and she does not want to go back there. And so it's like, yeah, she's horrible, but I get you. It's okay.
I think it's safe to say she's definitely a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
But there's a reason. The omnibus is 1,200 pages, and it's just wide enough to have her on the entire spine. So I'll say there's a specific reason why they end up, like, she ends up being, I think Peter Milligan said that she was his favorite character that he's ever written for. So, I mean, unfortunately, you know, 5 issues in, you don't really get that, but yeah.
But she is definitely, I think, the most fleshed out here, because you get both parts of her. You get to see her surface level personality of narcissism, and you get to see what drives it. Whereas the less developed characters, you don't get those two separate layers. Like, Bloke is who Bloke is. And there's just the one layer to Bloke. And even the Anarchist, who I really like, for a whole bunch of reasons. I love that what does Mr. Sensitive say? Like, his heartbeat never changes. Like, it stays the same. And I'm like, that's genius, because he has to for his powers. That means he has really good control over his powers. And also, he happens to not give a shit about all the people he's murdering the fuck out of.
And like, face-melting murder. Not even just like, oh, you know, with a gun or whatever. This is like gruesome, gruesome shit. I love it.
And like,
as gruesome as the art will allow, at least.
as much as I like him, he's still just a one-layer character. You, Gogoro, I think, is the only one who's two-layer here. Maybe Dupe.
Well, there's more to Dupe than meets the eye.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dupe makes art house films and... What are Dupe's powers? Is he just like the ghost from Ghostbusters? Is that what he is?
Isn't he like an alien or something?
No, he's a mutant.
I'll tell you, in the old card game, his
he was called the ultimate weapon. I mean, he is pretty fantastic, but I don't think it even ever says what his real powers are, if anything, other than extra cool editing.
Okay, so he actually is just Slimer. All right.
More or less, yeah.
With the power to speak. So I should point out, I mean, I've never bothered to translate, but there you can find online, you can find the key. He's basically speaking wingdings.
Is he?
Really?
Yeah, essentially, you can just Google it right now, say Duke speak, and it'll show you the key, and you can write it down. Like, I mean, I did it with all new Duke, and I started translating the first like page, and it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what you'd expect. So, yeah.
Wow.
Dedicated fans out there. There you go.
That's awesome. So the major story arc of this comic, right, at least in my mind, aside from the whole this is the team and all that kind of stuff, the one that we get the bulk of the time talking about is saving, what's the kid's, Paco?
Just call him Elian Gonzalez. Paco Perez, that's right. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Estrona is Cuba. It's the same damn thing. It really is, yeah.
So what did we think about that, like, as a plot device?
I don't think it really has any, like, it doesn't, I think it's like a kind of a throwaway plot, maybe to just continue showing us the dynamic of the team members. I think they really could have been put in any kind of situation, but it shows us, well, so Orphan kind of rises to the occasion, and then we kind of, he becomes the leader that Coach doesn't want him to be, right?
Yeah.
He becomes too heroic because he's kind of bringing the team together, which is the opposite of what the Spike Freeman guy wanted.
Yeah. And I mean, Coach set him up because he was a milquetoast, because he was a wuss, hoping he would waver in the wind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But instead, you know, he rises to the occasion and saves the day. And on top of completing the mission, he even does the right thing.
Yeah.
Because he knows what's going to happen to the kid if he brings him back. So he takes him to that, you know, that children's home in Argentina.
That was Saint Anna's father, right?
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. I'm glad
I was not gotten any love, unfortunately. But I mean, that's the thing. She has 4 lines of dialogue, unfortunately. Yeah. And yeah. She was actually one of the more interesting ones, but then just, yeah.
How did she phrase it? Like, do you want me to enter you? Or she sent something really weird when she offered to heal people. And I was like, I just want to see how this works. Everybody keeps turning her down, and I just want to see what the fuck she does. And then she dies before you get to see
it. You go girl takes it. You can see it in the background. She's running her hands through her hair and doing
whatever. Oh, yeah, that's so, right.
Yeah. She takes the healing because she needs it. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, the thing about the whole Paco Perez arc is you're right. You are absolutely right. It's a complete waste of time arc. It's just whatever. We need a mission. But the thing is, there's one of the things I love about it. Issue number one, like 5 pages in, they tell you right off the bat what this thing's about. It says, you know, this whole thing is about the lives we lead. No one cares about the missions we're on. It's the price we pay. So it really is kind of just, yeah, who cares? We're just going to send them on missions to do whatever. And then the real story is about, I mean, like, you notice, like, that whole fight with X-Force, it was like 3 pages and then it was just done. They didn't even show the resolution. It's like, yeah, this joke's warranted, we're good, we're whatever, we don't care, let's just move right the plot along. Yeah. And so instead of wasting a bunch of things, honestly, that's the one of the things that I was like, I stopped caring about comics a long time ago because it was too much like, oh, all right, they fight now for 10 pages. The least interesting thing to me has always been the fighting. It's always been like what heroes do in their off hours. That that's why what's it, Hawkeye, that looks fantastic. It's just all about like, hey, I need to get my cable repaired.
Oh, Tony Stark, that comic's great, fix my cable.
Yeah, and so I mean, same deal here. It's like this is mainly about, we need to go on a mission, we need to have some guys die just to show the audience that yeah, this is real, and then we're just gonna go back, have fun, and eat dinner and have dupes stalk us, go figure.
You know what though, it is definitely a throwaway arc, but what I really appreciate is the way that it's weird how I appreciate them murdering so many people in the first issue, because then, even though this is a throwaway arc, they're just going saving some Paco kid, but they could all die. I would believe it, because they all died saving stupid Boys R Us. Like,
and they didn't even save anyone. You see their bones in there, too.
Yeah. So, like, the first mission was just as dumb as this one, and that mission killed almost the entire team. So even though this mission seems stupid and throwaway while you're reading, you have to give it a little bit of credence, because everybody might die at the end.
Well, I think that's true for in any superhero comic, but the thing is we never really see it, right?
Yeah, and in most comics you know it's not going to happen.
But I see,
that's the thing. These guys don't have protagonist power. It's not super established who the protagonists are. And I mean, at the like you, Andy, at the end of that first issue, I was surprised people died. I was like, "Well, that's serious."
But I think because of the attitude of these characters, and you know, Nick mentioned earlier that they're all horrible people, and it's absolutely true, is that when some of them do die on the Paco mission, I mean, who dies?
Bloke Saint Anne.
And then I want to be an American guy.
And to me, that their deaths have like no. For me, it was just like this is just part of the story. It had like no impact whatsoever. The aftermath of Orphan going to Saint Anna's father and then sneezing on him had some impact, but
their actual deaths
had very little. Like, okay, so Bloke died, and I was like, whoa, that seems like a gruesome thing. And I kind of waited, and I thought, doesn't Saint Anna have like some kind of healing power? Can she heal him? And then he just died. You know.
Well, she tried, but he was too far gone, by his own words.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So I think that this comic kind of desensitizes you to deaths of characters from the beginning, and the way that the characters are rolled out for the second part of the team, you can almost say that, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Orphan is going to be a central character, but the other ones all have, and by the other ones I mean Fat, Vivisector, Bloke, Saint Anna, all have the same type of introduction.
Yeah,
it's like a couple, like 3-4 panels maybe. They all have the same weight, so really any of them could have died, and I feel like it would have had the same impact.
Which is not any
impact at all.
Which is something that makes me really interested to keep reading this, because you get big team books like X-Men, right? Or even FF, right? With the Future Foundation and all those kids. They have a big cast. But once you get to know those characters, it's kind of just juggling the cast, making sure everybody gets their screen time, and everybody gets the same amount of development. And once you've gotten past learning who they all are, there's no more novelty in it. And with this kind of book, if you're willing to kill characters off left and right, the neat thing is you can pull a new character out of your ass, and if you happen to like them, you can keep them. And if you don't happen to like them, they just die.
I'll point out as well that that's part of the like fun of the new characters. They all have such stupid powers.
Yeah.
Partly because it's like, hey, we killed 4 guys already. Well, let's come up with 4 new ones. We need a power for them. Let's give them a skateboard that's sentient. Spoilers. Actually, no, you know what? That's past where we're going, so I don't even care.
Yeah, but like,
Stuff past X-Statics 5, I don't care.
Which is why, you know, like, when we read Green Lantern Corps a couple weeks ago, it wasn't the best comic, but I really appreciate when a creative team puts himself in a position to be willing to just invent characters left and right and just try new things with them. Because it's neat to take on a classic character and balance him and create one or two supporting characters, but it takes a certain amount of cojones to set up the entire premise of a book so that you can constantly be introducing new characters and tossing them aside and creating new ones and changing dynamics.
Well, I think you can do that without killing off characters.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, for example.
Yes.
So Justice League seasons 3 or 3 and 4, that had the big 5 Justice Leaguers were always in the show: Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern. But we got a rotating cast of other characters, like Green Arrow would show up for a couple episodes, and then you would have people like Vigilante, you know, or what's that guy?
The Question and the Huntress episodes. Those are great. Yeah,
those are really good ones. And those, the characters would come in for a couple episodes, and they would go out. And that they were able to keep you interested by rotating the cast without killing people. And so I think that's why FF works, because I wouldn't want to see kids getting killed and then them replacing them with new kids constantly. No. Anyway, but that would be pretty
dark.
Some
of those kids deserve it.
But like, I guess my point is that I think you can do it without. I think this is a valid way to do this kind of thing, and this is definitely an interesting take. But you don't necessarily kill people off all the time.
Sorry, I just heard a little baby crying in the back.
Yeah, she's crying in the background. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's adorable.
Send her to the FF.
There you
go.
Yeah.
They have room in the Baxter Building. Why the fuck not?
Herbie can take care of her. It's all right.
So the other storyline that we get is the quote-unquote civil war between the two X-Force teams. This is way before when Civil War happened. When did actual Civil War happen? That was like 2009 or something, right?
Yeah, somewhere around then.
Okay. What did you guys think of that whole thing? The pitting the two sides of the team together, building up that. Where does that... I get the feeling Nick has some background about this.
No, actually, the funny thing is there isn't a whole lot of background. It's just, like, as I said, that since the other two came... the writer and the artist came from indie backgrounds, they're like, well, what annoys us? And the answer they came up with unanimously was Rob... Is it Liefeld or Layfield?
I say Layfield.
You know, honestly, I don't feel like he deserves to have his name pronounced correctly. So I'm going to go with Liefeld, and if I'm wrong, I don't care. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like they just didn't like the whole, oh, grim, dark, whatever, in the grim darkness of the future, there are mutants. And they have shiny eyes. It's like, what? Well, that's stupid. No one cares. So yeah, it's just like, and everyone has pockets. You'll notice in this one, yeah, no one pouches. Has pouches. Yeah, no pouches in this show. God damn it, I'm gonna stop doing that someday. Anyway, no pockets, no pouches.
Nick,
no,
we've been doing this for years, and I have never stopped calling issues episodes.
Oh, fantastic. But yeah, no, I mean, so that's the thing. So actually, even like Spike Freeman, trillionaire, let's give due respect where it's due, the trillionaire software developer who owns the X-Statics brand and is the one getting the mission so that they can earn him more money. He's basically based on Liefeld, like saying, oh, I want more blood, more guts, more, let's get them to fight each other. And it's just kind of like they didn't realize that, you know, 10 years down the line, whatever year it was that they actually did it, that, you know, they were going to have the Avengers fight each other in a civil war. But, I mean, they basically called it. Like, I mean, this is the only way you can go from here on out.
Yeah. It's like, of course, you know, because they're terrible people. And you, in the beginning, you get the sense that Coach isn't a good guy. But as you keep reading, you're like, oh, he's really not a good good guy at all. And once you pick up on that, you realize that this team is fucked from the top.
Yeah.
And it's neat to see that play out, but not in the way that they were hoping. I don't know. I like the way that it was pleasantly foiled by you, Go Girl.
By her having a conscience after all.
Or maybe not. I swear she doesn't have a conscience. She's just acting in her own self-interest, though.
It'll make her more famous if she saves him.
I think Jen hit the nail on the head with that one.
Got nothing on that one. Sorry.
We spend a lot of time talking about the characters for the last however long we've been talking. Let's talk about the art. I'm a huge fan of Mike Allred.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that this it's kind of like the pop art that we got in like romance comics in the 60s and stuff. It reminds me of that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the style that, like, I guess Warhol used it in some of his work.
Yeah, very much so.
Very Lichtenstein-esque.
Yeah, Lichtenstein. That's what I was trying to. That's what I was going for. Yeah. Anyways, I'm not an art person. Anyways,
I thought she was talking about country.
Oh, like from the... I love that movie. Isn't that... Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent now. No, there's a movie... it's a Knight's Tale. You guys seen that movie?
Yeah. Between Switzerland and some other country. So, yeah.
Sir Ulrich von Lichtenstein.
Forgot about that.
So anyways, I really like Mike Allred's art, and I think it is perfect for this, for what this comic is about. Like, his art's very clean and fun looking, but then we get lots of charred corpses and stuff.
Yeah, well, like at the end of that first issue, Exit Wounds, like, isn't almost in a way like the cleanness and shiny art, doesn't that even just make it a little bit more gruesome? Like, I was actually, as someone who hadn't read a comic, like, I read this back when it first came out in 2001. I don't remember, my brain's fried. Gin, yum. But I mean, like reading it again all these years later, I'm looking at this like, oh, that is the cleanest, nicest looking intestine I have ever seen. And so in a way, it makes it even more gruesome.
Yeah, I think this comic is really subversive in that way, because I get the feeling they were cleared for all of this gore because they saw Mike Allred's style and was like, oh, it's just going to look like squeaky clean intestines and it'll be fine. And it'll be too abstract and less, quote unquote, real. You know, it'll look less gruesome. It'll look less, I don't know, it'll look less messy, less like the reality that it would be if your guts got blown open. So they probably gave them the go-ahead for all this gore, not expecting to get this back. And then when this comes back, they go, oh, well, yeah, it's fine. There's not like, you know, it doesn't look like the way gore typically looks, so let's just print it.
Right.
Except that means that they could sneak in even more gore and make even more murder happen and more blood everywhere and charred corpses. And you're right, because it's super shiny, it stands out as being almost freakish in the way that it displays the gore. So even though it's not messy the way blood and guts are, it's almost more scary.
Yeah, you know, fun fact, actually, you'll have to look it up because I don't remember details. I just know that they've said Allred decided that issue, saying it's his favorite one because he says it destroyed the comic code. Now, I don't know the exact timing afterwards, but
they stopped doing that, right?
Yeah, they're just like, around that time, they're just like, yeah, this is stupid, we don't care anymore, and it was largely because of that issue. So, yeah, that even if you read the Omnibus, like, their notes and whatever, they ask, like, hey, what are you most proud of? He's like, I killed the comics code, suck it! And, like, that's all they'll talk about. That, and, you know, killing all
that actually
people.
Brings up kind of an interesting thing that happened when I was reading this. My boyfriend was standing behind me looking at what I was reading, and I got past the point where the anarchist is hanging out with, like, the babes in the hot tub.
Yeah.
And to the point where everyone's guts are everywhere. And he goes, it's really weird that they'll show that, but no tits.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, well, that is actually pretty extreme. And then we checked, and there was no comics code seal on the front. And I was like, welp. But yeah. It's strange what they choose is, like, appropriate, quote-unquote, and then what they can't show.
You get the silhouette of two nipples, though, so there you go.
Ooh.
When you're 19, that's the goods right there.
Oh, no, that's... You can't show that, because if you unsilhouette them, then a 13-year-old will fap to it. But if you silhouette them, then it's impossible.
If you silhouette them, a 19-year-old still will. I'm just saying. I really hope my mom doesn't listen to this.
Give me your email address, I'll send it to her.
Good time.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's we have the same problem in America in television and in film and all over the place. We're A+ okay with violence, but, you know, if it's got a curse word or nudity, then it gets an R rating immediately.
Yeah, like, I just like to think that Dupe was swearing just the entire time, and that's it. Because it makes, I don't know, yeah, because they do censor out a lot of, actually, a little bit later on, they do the what do you call it, like the fake censor, where ass is censored as @ and then $$.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, like, so you know what they're saying, but yeah, I just like to say, I think that he was the most foul-mouthed person in the universe.
That's like when people posted things saying R2-D2 was the most obscene character in all of history because every single word was bleeped. Nah, I like that interpretation.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
It's me right, or he's the most bone. Shakespearean, apparently.
It's interesting that he is the guy who broke the comics code, and you would... If I were in his position, I would be most proud of it. Because if you think about all of the other artists out there who have drawn all kinds of unpleasant shit and didn't do it the way he did, like, come on. Of all the people to do it, you wouldn't expect Mike Allred to be associated with the ending of the comics code.
You know, in all seriousness, what it reminds me of is Happy Tree Friends. Like, you watch that show,
oh, Jesus.
And the gore on it is just ridiculous. Like, I hadn't seen an episode in years, and so a couple weeks back we watched one, and I was... I was laughing my ass off, but then basically decided, yeah, this is really wrong. And it's the exact same thing with the gore in this. Like, not actually, you know, honestly, other than that first issue, there really isn't too much. You see some flesh ripped off folks and whatnot, but it was really just that one.
Yeah, huh. When they're fighting for Paco, yeah, you see people with, like, just, they're just painted red, basically, is the only difference, with some tendons drawn on. And I think that's just the anarchists, like, burning off their skin.
Yeah. And even I noticed what's her name? St. Anna, when she got, I assume she got shot? I honestly don't know. Like, it just says, hey, you might want to help her. I'm going to sleep now. There's, like, purple on her. And then when they teleport away, it's red. But, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, all right.
Well, I actually don't have a whole lot more to say about this comic. Do you guys have anything you want to bring up?
This whole discussion kind of changed my opinion of how I felt about this comic. I'll say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jen, you had some stuff in the notes. What was it?
Oh, yeah. I just thought it was, like, interesting how they played on, like, pretty much every bad trope that you could imagine.
I mean, it came right out of the 90s with swinging.
But I just, and I know it's like satire, but I made a list. It's like there's hero team lead angst, betrayal, yeah. infighting, rape, in case we didn't know bad guy was evil. make right choice and save a child. Heroes get babes and Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine. And
Wolverine is a trope at this point.
And no, the best thing about Wolverine is Wolverine came in and... So it's a trope to have Wolverine come in and, like, be the guest star of a comic. That's a trope, mm-hmm. right? But it's almost like in that issue, Wolverine was self-aware of his tropiness. Like, the first time you see him, he's got the jacket, like, coming open so you can see the hairy chest, like, pin-up style almost. And it's like, what the fuck is even going on here?
Well, no, that's the Frank Quietly Grant Morrison look.
Is that another look?
Yeah, that's the Morrison leather jacket costume.
That would be fucking Grant Morrison.
Well, did the trade have the covers printed in them?
So I read it on Marvel's online, and it does have the covers.
Okay, yeah. So you see the cover where it is Wolverine just staring at the reader and saying, "I'm just here to boost sales."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like he really is just there because this is the highest popularity, right? Where he's just in everything.
Yeah.
In 72 comics a week. Yeah.
The greatest thing about the cover too is that it's essentially the first panel of the book because when you look at the first panel, it's from the other angle because now you see Dupe from behind Wolverine mm-hmm. because on the cover you're looking through Dupe's camera.
Yeah.
Notice also which claw he had pointing at the audience there. Just one claw popped. Go figure.
Yep.
Little finger.
I also like the way that he comes in as a little bit of a walking deus ex machina and kills, who does he kill? He kills Succubus and Smoke.
Yeah.
And maybe I've been watching too much One Piece, but I don't understand how Wolverine could kill a guy made out of smoke.
He's Wolverine.
Right? But, like, I love that, like, he's so much of the walking deus ex machina in the Marvel Universe that he can kill a person made out of smoke using claws. When they went fighting, I was like, what is he even going to do? And then all of a sudden the smoke is cut up. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, cut him in half. Smoke has internal organs, too.
But they turn into smoke. I'm assuming. I don't know. I've never seen smoke before. I'm just imagining he's made out of smoke.
You ever watched Lost?
I don't know.
How do you kill the smoke monster? There you go.
With sound?
I don't know. Maybe Wolverine just has...
I haven't seen that far into Lost. Maybe they never even killed it.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
Maybe Wolverine just
cool. Don't worry
hockey.
About it. It's been 10 years. At this point, I deserve to be spoiled on it. I had a point and I lost it, whatever. Actually, I don't even know if they killed Succubus. I assume so just because, I mean, after all, it's X-Force, soon to be X-Statics, so everyone dies at some point, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm just assuming if they go away in this comic, I've assumed that they've died.
Yeah, I like to pretend that someone survived this whole thing, other than Duke, seeing as how he has his own comic. I feel that's not a spoiler.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get down and rate this. So, Nick, the way we do this is we'll rate the comic on a 1 to 5, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best, 5 being, like a perfect comic is a 5. I think I've only given out, like, 5 or 6 fives the whole time we've been doing this. But they were fucking good. They were
what
A-plus.
Did we? I'm trying to think of what we gave fives to. Maybe, V for Vendetta?
No, God, no. I would never give V for Vendetta.
Did we give that a 5? I'm trying to
Craven's
think.
Craven's Last Hunt. Got
yeah, Craven's Last Hunt was 5.
Oh, and, like, so Spawn. Spawn number 1 got...
All ones.
Got all ones.
No, Spawn number 1 got... I think it averaged, like, a 0.25 between the three of us.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I have to tell you how happy that makes me, because I was afraid you guys were going to say 5, and I was just going to shut down Skype right now.
No.
Go to
God,
bed.
Spawn volume 1 is fucking horrendous.
Write an angry letter to the editor and never send it.
I think Saga of the Swamp Thing, Walt Simonson's Thor, I think, got a 5.
I definitely give that a 5.
Yeah, definitely Craven's Last Hunt got a 5. Never Anything by Grant Morrison ever got a 5.
Because we were too weirded out by it.
No, you know what? That's a lie. All-Star Superman. I did give All-Star Superman a 5. So a couple.
I think we gave Batman Dark Knight Returns a 5, probably.
Next Wave, Agents of Hate, that got a 5.
Oh, yeah, that got a 5.
I love you guys. You guys reviewed it, Hate? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That makes me so sad. That was actually, if you, never mind, don't worry. That is my absolute gold standard. And I will point out as well that I don't think you could have done Next Wave without something like this.
Oh,
10 years.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I feel like this was definitely a precursor to that comic.
So rate this a 7 or else I cry. No, it's cool. I want to point out, this definitely isn't for everyone. Like, I tried, maybe I just didn't explain it correctly to a couple of our friends, Monica being one. But they, like, just my description of it, they're like, that sounds terrible. Why would you ever want to read it? And I was like, but.
You know why Monica thinks it's terrible? Because it doesn't have Captain America in it.
No, you know what? It does. Not what we're going to be reading, but it does. At some
just have her read those issues and she'll love it forever.
Oh, she'll hate them. I'm not joking, and I know she'll hate them.
Okay. What else? Saga.
It's a little bit of a dick.
Yeah. Oh, Underwater Welder. That one also got a 5. Yeah. So I'm just scrolling through the list now. So we have given out a bunch of 5s, but we've also been doing this for almost 4 years.
Yeah, I was going to say 4 years. If you only have like 3 or 4 5s, then maybe you just need to readjust your scale a little.
No, but I did decide a couple weeks ago that I was going to start giving lower, because I feel like the average level of quality of comics has gone up over the last couple of years while we've been doing the show.
Well, I think we've deliberately picked good things to read also.
Yeah, that's true.
That helps.
Nobody's reading Brotherhood at this point. Which, by the way, in the office, I'm going to point out right now, the last issue of the Brotherhood is considered so bad that they actually put it in XX Omnibus. And all it is them just beating up every last member of the Brotherhood. And, like, not even knowing why. Just, like, they're in a parade because they're so amazing. And they get attacked. And she's like, well, I guess we'll just kill all these guys. Oh, okay. And that's the end of that entire comic. It didn't even last 12 issues. It lasted 9. They didn't even go for a round number with it. They just, like, fuck it. Whatever. Kill them all. All right, cool.
Okay. Anyway,
that's
1 to 5.
Tangent, I'm sorry.
1 to 5. Nick, give me a number.
Okay, so you want me to just do just this first 5 issues, or
just this trade? Because we're going to read more X-Force next week and X-Static the week after that.
So I'm going to go. Trade.
And I know it's hard to distance yourself. I know it is.
Yeah.
But
I'm
try.
Gonna go, well, so I'm biased. I'll throw my bias away. I'll say for the average person, 3.5, largely because I know the next one is probably better, and so I can't say 4, and then the next one gets 5. That would be kind of biased. So yeah, 3.5, if I'm putting my fan hat on. 755,000, but
seems reasonable. Yeah.
What? Over 9,000?
Yeah, legit. No.
Okay. David?
All right, so like I said before, we talked about the rating system, my opinion of this comic changed as we were talking about it. So after I finished reading it this afternoon, I was like, what the fuck did I just read?
Exactly. That's the entire point.
And so, but it wasn't a unanimous, like, it wasn't an automatic, like, this is stupid. And I think I think I didn't automatically jump to that because I've read, you know, I've read a lot of comics, and I've read a lot of bad comics in my time. And so, as we talked about this, and Nick, you set the context for the comic, like, and this is definitely a comic of its time. And so if you kind of put put yourself in that frame of mind, this comic makes perfect sense. And so once we kind of talked about it, and I realized, you know, this is a smart comic. It's funny, and it's kind of gruesome, and, you know, it does a lot of the things we wouldn't see in comics. It's a comic that's a parody of comics, and maybe not comics in general, but at least superhero teams and X teams in very specifically. And, you know, it's I definitely feel like I had fun reading it now that I can't, you know, now that we've talked about it and I've been able to think about it. It was a fun read. So I think initially I was probably going to give it like a 2. But I'm gonna bump that up to a 3.5. I think I agree with Nick. It's definitely not for everybody. But I think if you have, I think for the right person, this is a really fun comic. And so I'm definitely looking forward to reading the next two episodes.
Nice.
So 3.5. Sorry.
Your daughter does not agree, David.
Mike, all right, just I will take $5 from you for getting that extra point.
All right, Jen.
So I had the exact same thought pattern as David on this one. I read this and I was just like, the fuck? So one of my biggest, favoritest things ever is when people are clever and do it right. And I feel like the whole point of this comic was to be unpleasant, but they knew they were doing it, and they executed that in a perfect way, because it was really unpleasant. But I also felt like if they were going to go that satire route, they needed to play up the satire a little more on some things. Otherwise, it just becomes kind of like this really crazy comic where horrible things happen and everything is shitty forever and people are bad. And, you know, like, nothing wrong with that per se. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, you have throwaway token characters. That's kind of like, you gotta play that up a little more. And maybe they do later. It really, the scene where Coach is like, and I'm gonna rape you while you can't move. Like, what the hell was that? And I know it's because he's evil and evil things happen in comics, like the same way that they turned Dr. Light into a rapist in Identity Crisis. And we get, you know, more of this crap in the 90s. So it is playing on that, but at the same time, you need, if you're going to play that game, you need to show why these things are dumb or unacceptable instead of just kind of having them there. If this hadn't come with the intent of being like, we're just gonna do something fucking crazy and, you know, make this commentary on comics, I would have given it a much lower score. As it stands, I'd say 2.5. And if it hadn't been so unpleasant, I'd be happy giving it like a 4, 4.5, because I actually do want to read more. And I probably will, because I really am curious to find out what happens to these fuck-ups. But I don't know, just I needed a little more playing with satire to make it more palatable, I guess.
Okay. I guess I'm going to give it the highest rating. I'm going to give it a 4.
Well, then I give it 4.1 just to beat you.
Because,
sorry, do go on, please.
Because I think I know why I like this one so much better than you did, Jen. Because when it was the 90s, what kind of comics were you reading? Manga,
X-Men.
Mostly, right? Didn't you have, like, mostly, like, a manga background?
That was in the 2000s.
Was that later?
I read a lot of X-Men as a kid.
Okay. Because I read a lot of comics in the 90s. I read a lot of stuff, read a lot of Green Lantern, read a lot of DC, and DC was getting kind of brutal. This was a little bit after the time when Hal Jordan went crazy and murdered all of his friends and all that kind of stuff. And the art, for the most part, was terrible, and people were bad and angsty. And I feel like this is a pitch-perfect satire coming right out of the 90s. And we've read other things before, I can't remember off the top of my head, that were satirical of the 90s and 90s comics. But this, it just came off as wonderfully perfect satire of that entire period of comics. Like, almost anything you can complain about that went wrong in 90s comics, this parodies it, or specifically avoids ever touching it. So it parodies the tropes of the 90s that we talked about earlier, but it also, pockets are stupid, so nobody has any fucking pockets, okay? You know? So it either shows you the parody in a way that you know is comical because the art presents it in a certain manner, just like we were talking about with the guts and the gore, it's like, we'll just make it glossy because everybody wants to see gore, but glossy's good, so we'll just have glossy guts. And it's like, the whole team dying twice within two issues, that's a parody of the 90s. That's a parody. And the other thing, though, like, the opposite, like, no, pockets are stupid. We'll just not have any fucking... It's perfect parody. And I agree with... my initial reaction was a lot like yours, David. What the fuck is this? But I'm giving a solid 4 because the only other comic that I put down and felt as much what the fuck, more what the fuck, was The Filth by Grant Morrison. And that was, what the fuck? This was so goddamn stupid. But... this comic was, what the fuck? Where's volume 2? Which is always resoundingly good. So we'll see what happens next week. Next week, we're going to continue reading this. This ended with issue 120. Next week's TPB, X-Force, final chapter, collects 121 to 129, written and drawn by the same people. If you want to know what we have coming up after that, hint, it's the comic after X-Force, just like the next one in order. But we even have stuff planned for after that. All you have to do to get the information is go to our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. If you have a suggestion for what we should read coming up, if anything, actually, you know, if you email us or send a suggestion any way you want, I promise we will make it the very next episode to come out. I promise you. I'll stick it in the middle of an arc. That's how much I want your feedback. I want it so bad. But to send it to us, give us an email at...
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
God, I sounded so desperate right there. Jesus.
I gotta admit, I'm surprised you have a website. Like, people have said, you got a podcast. I was like, wow, okay, whatever, I'll do it. And then they're like, oh, a website? I'm like, I'm going to have to do some work here.
Yeah, we got listeners and shit, man. It's amazing.
Oh, God.
We also have social media pages. Twitter.com/APSupercast, Facebook.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com, where I am currently spamming the shit out of things. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right.
Wait, people listen to this on iTunes too?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. On iTunes. Guys, like, what? Really? You guys are. Wow. All right.
We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on all kinds of shit, man. We are like, professional and shit.
I should have done more homework.
Because I edit well. All right. Until next time, everybody. Goodbye.
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 Thank you. I feel as nice to be polite.
I like that.